Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. My name is Catherine Eastman. I'm the Archives Manager of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I am David Leopold, the Creative Director.
And today's episode is all about Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Who couldn't love that?
Exactly.
And there's actually a lot. Not surprisingly, they both had long theatrical careers, and he even drew some of their movies.
Yes.
In fact, Hirschfeld was in a movie with Rodgers and Hammerstein.
What was the movie?
It was called Main Street to Broadway. It came out in 1953. It was actually Al's movie debut.
Was it really?
Yes. 53? He wouldn't appear in another film until 1996. The Lion King.
With the Lion King. Yes. Oh, okay. Now, is this movie like a Thousands Cheer situation? Is it just names and more names?
There is a slight story to it. I've seen it maybe once. It is not a great movie. It is really a bunch of Broadway people trying to sort of show off on the movies. And so Mary Martin's in it. Nice. Josh Logan is in it.
I know Tallulah Bankhead's in it.
Tallulah Bankhead is in it. And in fact, there's a scene in the movie where they're rehearsing on stage. And we look out into the house, and there's Al Hirschfeld sketching in the house on a full-size board. It's completely not accurate.
Which he did not do.
But I guess a sketchbook would have looked too small.
No, you got to make it dramatic.
And in fact, he did a cover of Theater Arts Magazine that featured all the people in the film. It's a wonderful drawing, and it's really one of his, it may be his first drawing of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Really? Oh, interesting.
He's not on the cover. But everybody else is.
Oh.
His signature's there. I think that's enough. That's all we need to know.
Yes, Hirschfeld's on the scene. That says everything.
So they have, obviously, Rodgers and Hammerstein, one of the most successful composer-lyricist combos.
I would say the most successful. I'm going to go out on a limb and just say it.
They are, although individual shows from other songwriting teams might actually be more successful. I don't know if My Fair Lady, which according to the Marquee in 1962, was the world's greatest musical and is being revived again in New York this season.
Right.
That's a pretty popular show. Whether it's more popular than any Rodgers and Hammerstein show, I don't know. Well, I don't have those statistics in front of
me. I will
say
their most successful duo. Because they've got a lot of hits here. They got a lot of hits to go through.
Certainly, they have more songs in sort of the national lexicon and vocabulary than any other team on Broadway or in the movies.
Yeah.
To talk about Rodgers and Hammerstein, you have to really start at the beginning, which is Rodgers and Hart. Mm. Now, Hirschfeld had been drawing Rodgers and Hart musicals since 1928 with a show called Present Arm.
Yeah. Now, is this Present Arms or like Present Arms?
I would bet it's Present Arms.
Present Arms, yeah. I bet it is.
And it's a drawing of Charles King.
Isn't that funny? You had to have been there, I guess.
I'm pretty sure you could ask somebody. And somebody who actually knows the show.
Yeah,
and they would
that's
be able
true.
To tell you.
Okay, fine.
So it's the very first drawing is 1928. We can't go through every one of them because there are so many.
There are a lot.
Wonderful drawings. We're going to put them all in the show notes so you can see them. But we're going to make a stop at a couple of important shows.
Yes,
1935, Jumbo. Mm. This was a spectacle like you've never seen ever.
Yeah.
And evidently no one else has ever seen anything quite like it.
Right.
I did an exhibition last year with Hilary Knight, and he said when he saw the original production of Jumbo, it was a life-changing experience. Wow. He knew that he wanted to be part of it.
Mm. And Hilary Knight, of course, is the illustrator for the Eloise books.
Yes.
For those at home. That's
and many 30 other children's books.
Correct.
And a great artist of theater posters starting in the mid-60s.
Right.
And that's what I did the exhibition on, is theater work.
But now Jumbo is like this crazy circus thing, but it's a musical.
Yes.
Okay.
It had a book by Hecton MacArthur. The score was by Rodgers and Hart. It starred Jimmy Durante. Paul Whiteman led the orchestra.
Elephants.
There were elephants, of course. It was about an elephant. Essentially, the
Jumbo is the elephant.
Mm. And the Hippodrome Theater was this massive space.
Do you think that's where they got Dumbo from?
Yes.
Really?
Most definitely.
Oh, man.
Boy, we can smell the smoke going
here.
Her mind's really going. But
I just realized that.
Hirschfeld's drawing on the front page of the New York Times is considered a classic and is owned by the Library of Congress. And it shows all these different circus acts and vaudeville acts and Jimmy Durante sort of up coming up the side and Paul Whiteman in the corner. I mean, it is a crazy drawing. It was a totally crazy show. And it'll never get revived. But it was it produced two wonderful drawings.
There's a camel.
There's a camel.
Yeah.
Oh, there's horses. It's everything. There's clowns.
Turkey. Oh, sea lion.
There is a sea lion in there?
There is a sea lion. I see it. Wow. Yep.
There's another drawing of a Rodgers and Hart show with a sea lion, except he's called Sharky the Seal.
Yes, but it is definitely a sea lion. I've had this argument many times with David. Don't ask how it comes up in the office, but it does. And it's definitely a sea lion, not a seal.
The show is called Higher and Higher.
With Jack Haley.
With Jack Haley. And I just always say that she's wronger and wronger.
No. It is a sea lion, and that is the final verdict.
All right. If that's, I humor her, I let her say that. But when the animal's billed as Sharky the Seal, I think you have to give respect to calling it a seal.
Seal sounds better.
Anyway, another great Rodgers and Hart show that Hirschfeld did was On Your Toes, when it first appeared in 1936. He did several drawings for several different newspapers on it because the show actually had a long run. It played an entire season, which today doesn't seem so remarkable. But in 1936, if you played 9 months, you were fantastic. Wow. That was a long, long run.
Wow.
His first drawing of the show is my favorite because in the center of the drawing are Ray Bolger and Tamara Jeeva, who was a fine ballet dancer. George Balanchine had choreographed the show. And they're doing a dance move, and Hirschfeld sort of simulates the dance move by doing this blue wash that makes out a G clef. It looks like they have just danced that. And it's really wonderful. The blue wash would have been, was a sign for the engravers at the paper to use a Bende screen, which were a sort of, they would come with different numbers, and that would be almost dots per inch.
And it just kind of added contrast or added shadow to the
texture.
Yeah, texture to the drawings when they were printed.
And what was interesting about this drawing?
Yeah, it's a diptych, right?
Well, yes, it may have been originally been drawn on the same board. They're not any longer, but they were. We found out they were a diptych when we saw the actual newspaper page.
Yes, we found the newspaper page, and I said to David, "Oh, look, it's another clef on the other drawing, which I believe is an F clef, but don't quote me." I think a C clef is the viola one, and that looks different. But I think this is called an F clef.
The show was the Mikado. It was the Doily Cart Opera Company was in New York doing a season of Gilbert and Sullivan, and it's the Mikado and Coco's Fan. It looks like it's just been sort of
waved around,
and it. And this, and we can tell it's been waved because there's this blue wash that makes out this F clef.
The other clef, how's that?
Right.
But we had never made that connection before that they would have been on the same page because there was no indication that they were on the same page before.
They really resonated with each other.
They were meant to be seen next to each other.
Exactly.
At least on the same page.
They were wonderful standalones.
Definitely.
But when you saw them together, it had really wonderful power.
We both were like, I see.
And that is the kind of sly wit that Hirschfeld sort of embeds in the drawings that years later we're still making us
smile.
How
many years later? Yeah, too many.
Of course, the other great one, I think your favorite.
Yes, Babes in Arms. There are so many good drawings of Babes in Arms. I don't
1937.
Know. Yes. And the first one, I think it was for the Herald Tribune, he did this thing, so it's imagine a square drawing, but imagine he cut out the top right corner and the bottom left corner. So it's kind of this zigzag puzzle piece of a drawing.
And of course, it worked beautifully visually. It was visually interesting doing it that way. But there was probably another reason why he did it. Artists were paid by the column inch. And what he did is he took a two-column drawing and turned it into a four-column drawing by sort of pulling out the edges of the square.
While still only drawing basically two columns.
Yes. No extra ink was used in getting that four-column drawing.
That's funny.
But it's a really wonderful drawing.
Well, the next one is the Nicholas Brothers.
Oh,
and God. If you have not, I've watched them on YouTube. If you have not watched the Nicholas Brothers on YouTube, what are you doing right now? You need to stop everything and go watch them. They are crazy. I don't know how they do it, but it is insane.
Some of the great dancers. Yeah. Fred Astaire marveled at them. They were incredible.
Yeah. But there's a really great drawing of them that's just really very beautiful. And then the third drawing he did of Babes in Arms is one of my all-time favorite Hirschfeld drawings.
No kidding.
Yes. It's of Duke McHale. And quite often, you know, David and I do this illustrated talk called the Hirschfeld Century. We take it around to libraries, museums,
anywhere that will have us.
Yeah, any place that will have us for dinner. We bring this presentation
to. Have to give us dinner.
You don't have to, but we appreciate it. Yeah, I get hungry. but, you know, David talks and talks, and I keep putting up these images that appear magically on the screen behind him whenever he's talking about something.
I don't use a script.
No, he does not. It's completely improvised, so I have to be on my toes. But there's always a point in the presentation where David starts to talk to the audience about how the way we view Hirschfeld's work is changing, right?
Right.
We're no longer looking at the personality, but we're more looking at the drawing, the artistic, you know, nature of the drawing.
Yeah, younger audiences don't have the connection right. to the personalities. So they're just really looking at the drawing.
At the art, yeah, as it is a work of art. And it's kind of hard for, you know, if I were to put up a picture of Carol Channing and Hello, Dolly at that point, it would be hard for the older audience to kind of grasp what David is talking about. So the drawing I always put up when David starts to talk about this is the Duke McHale drawing, because I think it's a really great drawing that will show an older audience who probably, I would bet, does not know who Duke McHale is.
He's not a big marquee name.
No, the number of people who know who Duke McHale is very small in the audience. And so I'm able to show them exactly what David is talking about through this drawing because they don't bring that personality connection to it. And it's a very, it's
and
timeless.
It's a great drawing.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally timeless.
And in many ways, it's a classic Hirschfeld drawing that he could have done 50 years later and it would still seem completely fresh.
Yes, yeah.
That's the beauty of Hirschfeld.
It's one of my
Hirschfeld.
Favorite pieces, so that's my talk.
Well, here's
on
a
him.
Bit of Hirschfeld trivia.
Uh-oh.
What was Duke McHale's last Broadway show?
I do not know.
Well, it's a show that probably would be completely forgotten. It was a minor hit in the 45-46 Broadway season called Are You With It?
Oh, really?
And why would Are You With It be important to the Hirschfeld trivia?
Why would it, David?
That is the first drawing that features a Nina.
Yep.
And although
Nina the Wonder Child.
And although Duke McHale is not in the drawing, it was his show.
It was his show.
And that was his swan
funny.
Song. It was the end of Duke McHale and it was the start of Nina.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's sweet.
No. Duke McHale would go on and live on. Don't get
me
wrong.
Oh, okay. But it was his final show.
It was his final
show.
Gotcha. The last Rodgers and Hart musical we're going to talk about is also a really wonderful one. It's Boys from Syracuse.
Oh, yeah.
1938. Based on Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors. Mm. It has to do with mistaken identity. It features two actors who are playing twins.
Mm.
And
a twin, David.
Yes, I'm. All my life I've been a twin. In the original production, it was Jimmy Savo and Teddy Hart, who was actually Larry Hart's brother.
Mm.
They looked remarkably alike. And what Hirschfeld did was he had them share a face. In the center of the drawing, he has them sharing a face where they share an eye and then you see each of their noses and mouths. And it's a great optical illusion.
It is.
And when they revived the show off-Broadway in 1963, the producers come to Hirschfeld and he does a drawing very similar. He just focuses on the two figures. Again, they're sharing the head. It's much more generic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a cast album, there's a good chance that that is the thing that is on it. Or if you see a production, and it's usually they use this artwork all the time, oftentimes without licensing it from us. We know who you are. Look in your mailbox for a letter. No, just kidding. That was 1963. In 1965, for his Unlikely Casting series, he does a great riff on it. He takes Robert Preston and Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
Two men who nobody's going to mistake for each other.
Yeah.
And he has them share a face.
And it works.
In as if they were playing Boys from Syracuse.
Yeah.
And it's perfect.
Yeah, it's wild.
And in fact, that piece right now is currently in a museum exhibition at the Nassau County Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. It's called Fool the Eye, and it's a show about artists' optical illusions and sleight of hands. There's several Hirschfelds in it, but this one is in it because it's perfect for the theme.
Okay, is that it for Rogers and Hart? Can we move on?
Yes, there's many other drawings, but we'll put them in the show notes.
All right, that's all I'm going to let David talk about. Next, we're doing Hammerstein Before Rogers.
Yes, he's actually older than Richard Rogers. And he had worked with a variety of composers before Rogers. Mm. Jerome Kern, Rudolf Frimmel, Sigmund Romberg. Mm. And they had a number of successes and more than a few failures. the very first show that I want to talk about is one of the most important shows in American musical history because it's really the first integrated musical. It really sets the path for the 20th century musical, Showboat, 1927.
And now integrated musical, we're talking about songs who relate to the plot.
Right. Or back to and the songs plot. That actually move the plot along.
Right. Okay. Whereas before it was mostly reviews, meaning
even book shows had the performers came and they brought their own songs.
Right.
Or if the song there were
they would literally break out into song and it didn't make any sense.
Sometimes they would just walk to the edge of the stage
and sing
the song and it would change during the run of the show. It was a crazy time, and the reason why we do not hear not a lot of 1920s musicals are revived is because they're not very good.
Gotcha.
Certainly the books are terrible and the songs are okay. Yeah. There'd be hits in them.
That's funny.
But Showboat really was a very important musical because here were great songs that were furthering the story, and it would really sort of set the mold for it wouldn't happen right away. It would actually be an almost another 15 years before the rest of Broadway sort of caught up with Showboat.
Yeah.
But
this is 1927?
1927. Hirschfeld did not draw it.
Okay.
I think he might have been out of the country, maybe back in Paris. There was a Broadway revival in 32 that Hirschfeld missed because he was in Bali.
Oh.
There was even a film version, but it was done by a studio that he didn't do drawings for, so he never drew that.
Oh, my goodness.
The first time he draws Showboat is in 1945, when actually Rodgers and Hammerstein produce a revival of Showboat. Mm. And it's a wonderful drawing that... It sort of harkens back to some of the older drawings because it's really done on one plane.
Right.
But it's much more active and interesting than those drawings. And it'd be the first of about 8 drawings he would do of Showboat over the next 50 years.
Wow.
There's a great one of Burl Ives as Captain Andy in Showboat. Mm. Another one with Paul Hartman that has a very sort of athletic dancing of Jeffrey Holder in it.
Yeah.
The last one was in 1994. Hal Prince directed a revival of Showboat.
Mm.
And I remember having lunch at Hirschfeld's house the day after the opening. And I said, "How was it?" I remember this because it was so interesting. He starts off by saying, "It's like they poured gold on the stage."
Mm.
You know, meaning that it was a very luxurious production.
Mm, gotcha.
But he talked about it as if he had not seen it before, or that he had not drawn it before.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because he didn't remember those. It's because he saw everything in context of its time, of its moment. He wasn't thinking it's not as good as 45 or 27, which he probably saw that production.
Right.
And he was seeing it as it was in 1994. Mm. And it's a really terrific piece. Or maybe it's 98, I think. But it's really... And what's interesting also about that is it is really just a series of heads and sort of heads and shoulders because he didn't do sketches at the theater.
Mm.
He worked mostly from production stills and headshots.
Right. And that Showboat is 94. You were correct the first time.
Oh, there you go. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hammerstein spent most of the 30s writing musicals that were not hits on Broadway. He also went out to Hollywood and was also singularly unsuccessful.
Mm.
He was using a lot of the things that he learned in Showboat.
Mm.
And so it's funny that none of these things really catch on.
Well, maybe, clearly, I don't think the world was ready for it yet.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Maybe he didn't choose the right composers. It's very hard to say. So while in Hollywood, in 1941, he wrote a song for a film called Lady Be Good that was called Last Time I Saw Paris.
Ah.
And he won an Oscar for it. Nice. With the lyrics, that Jerome Kern wrote the music. And in 1954, they made a movie called Last Time I Saw Paris.
Inspired by the song.
Inspired by the song.
Oh, nice.
And Hirschfeld drew it for Collier's for the appointment with O'Hara column.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the other Hammerstein show that is not with Rodgers that I think is significant is Carmen Jones.
Mm.
This is the opera Carmen, which he took the music and he rewrote the lyrics. He recast it. So it's an all African-American show.
Oh,
it's a very unusual show that he wanted to do for a long time. But nobody wanted to support it until he had this monster smash with Oklahoma, and then Billy Rose said he'd be willing to produce it. And so it was produced on Broadway, I think, in 43.
Yes.
And then revived at City Center in the early 50s, and it traveled around the country. Hirschfeld drew both productions, and when it toured around the country, they used the Hirschfeld drawing as the program cover.
Oh, nice, nice. All right, so that brings us to 1943.
Right. So how Rodgers and Hammerstein got together, I won't get into all the specifics, but Rodgers was out of town in Philadelphia trying out a new show. And Larry Hart was sinking into alcoholism.
Mm.
He was a complicated man. He was a gay man at a time when being a gay man was not something that you could tell anybody.
Right.
And even in the world of the theater, it was just the love that dare not speak its name.
Right.
And I think that was a big cause of his alcoholism.
Mm.
And he was becoming unreliable. And Rodgers realized that this was not this. They might not be able to last. So while he's in Philadelphia, he takes a train out to Doylestown, Pennsylvania, where Oscar Hammerstein has just bought a home, a little farm. He always wanted to live in the country, and they found this home. According to Hammerstein, they had looked at a couple of different places. It had been raining. The clouds cleared. A rainbow appeared, and so they followed it to the end of the rainbow, they found Highland Farms.
I'm calling it another tall tale. Another tall tale of Oscar Hammerstein.
Oh, my God. You are a cynic.
This boy is just filled with him.
But in any event, so Hammerstein is living out in Bucks County. To be honest with you, his wife is making more money as an interior decorator than he is as a lyricist.
Wow.
Rodgers comes out to him and says, Larry's not doing well. I may need help on this show. And would you be interested in working on a new show with me? And Hammerstein, totally keeping with who he was, told Rodgers that he'd be willing to work with him in any way he needed him, and that when Larry Hart was better, he was willing to step away and even work under Larry Hart's name if that was needed, because he was doing it to help a friend.
Right.
I mean, because he had known Rodgers and Hart for literally their whole lives.
Right.
They met while they were in college.
Mm.
Rodgers had gotten the commission from the Theater Guild to do a musical adaptation of a play called Green Grow the Lilacs.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry Hart said a cowboy musical will never work, and he refused to work on it.
Oh,
and so
no.
Rodgers turns to Hammerstein, and they start their great partnership.
Mm. And what was the show called at this time?
Well, when it opened to New Haven, it was called Away We Go.
Right.
And it's funny. Hirschfeld tells a story in the world of Hirschfeld. People would say to him, listen, you see these shows out of town. You must know what the hits are or the flops are by the time they come to Broadway. And he would tell this story as a way to say, no, you never know. So he goes to New Haven, to Schubert Theater, to see Rodgers and Hammerstein, new musical. I mean, these are two people that are well known in the theater.
Right.
Everybody wants to go. The show's called Away We Go, and after the performance, Lawrence Langer, the producer of the Theater Guild, asks Hirschfeld, Billy Rose, and Mike Todd to come to the coffee shop, which is across the street from the theater, to talk about the show. And Langer admits that he has a tin ear, that he wouldn't know a good song if it fell on him.
Oh, no.
But that the Theater Guild has all their money wrapped up in this production.
Wow.
And if it isn't going to work, he wants to cut their losses.
Oh, no.
And he asked these three veterans, three Broadway veterans. Hirschfeld's only been working for 15 years, a little close to 20 years at this point. Mike Todd and Billy Rose had been working just as long in the theater.
Wow.
And Mike Todd said, if it was my show, I'd close the turkey. And Billy Rose thought that if they put a few more gags and girls in it, that the show had a chance. There were some good songs in it, and that would be good. And Hirschfeld freely admitted that he had no idea, because Hirschfeld wasn't looking at the show in that way. He was trying to capture the action on stage. He was trying to capture the character of the show. But he could see that this show might not be coming into New York. So he doesn't return to New York. He goes to Boston. Because the other show that is trying out of town, that's supposed to be coming in at the same time, is The Ziegfeld Follies of 1943, which did not include Ziegfeld, because Ziegfeld was already dead, and evidently did not include anything very good.
Well, Milton Berle was in it.
Milton Berle was in it, but it's not the thing that Milton Berle would feature on his resume. And so Hirschfeld didn't know what to do, and in one of the few sort of, I think, sort of indecisive moments in his career, he does a drawing that features both shows sort of intermingled with each other.
Yeah.
He goes to, and now the show's got a new name, Oklahoma. You know, and I mean, he just sees it. He had seen this before. He had seen shows that struggled out of town.
Right.
And he never came in. Had name changes, had cast changes, had song changes. So he wasn't so sure. Well, he goes to the St. James Theater on March 31st, 1943. And he knows right away, just like everybody else in the audience, that they are witnessing a great musical premiering on Broadway.
Wow.
And he would draw Oklahoma a number of times. He did a great drawing that showed Joseph Bulloff, who plays the peddler in the original production, as walking past this milestone of Hell's a Poppin', which at that time was the longest running show on Broadway. And this is showing that Oklahoma is passing Hell's a Poppin' as the longest running show on Broadway. He did a revival in 1969 that featured Margaret Hamilton.
Yeah.
The Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz. He did a revival, the last one that he did Friday drawings of other revivals. Yeah. The last one that he did was in February of 2002, and it's a color image that appeared on the front page of the New York Times Arts and Leisure section. There's a wonderful photograph of Hirschfeld actually painting the piece, that his wife Louise took, that we often use as a publicity photo. But, you know, Oklahoma was one of those shows that would end up, as many revivals as it's been, it didn't run any. It did not run as long on Broadway as Hirschfeld did.
Right. Still, Oklahoma was the first musical that I remember seeing at the West Virginia State Theater. My granny took me, and I loved it. And so it's always been my favorite Rodgers and Hammerstein. And I joke, but it is probably my favorite musical. Every time I always say that, people always laugh at me because they think it's this hunky, you know, this kind of do-do-do-do-do cowboy musical, like you were saying, but it is really good.
Look,
I always cry in it.
It's a good musical that features pornography.
It does. Attempt, or, you know, thinking about suicide.
The Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals are not as corny and sweet as we tend to think they are.
Yes, and it's interesting. Yeah, I think that's a good point to bring up, because we do look at them now as these kind of very cute, safe for middle schoolers to play, you know, on the middle school stage. But I think in their time, they were quite groundbreaking and risque.
I wouldn't know about risque, but they definitely.
Well, I mean, Carousel. He's
right. So the next show is Carousel.
Yeah. So let's talk, let's move on from Oklahoma. Let's go to Carousel.
So the original production of Carousel featured John Raitt as Billy Bigelow, who's a wife beater.
Yeah, he is a wife beater. There's nothing.
In the Me Too moment, he would not do so well.
No, he would not.
The funny thing is, there was a great revival in 94, I think.
Yeah.
At Lincoln Center Theater that really made people think about Carousel in a completely fresh way.
Yeah.
Really one of those landmark productions. And I remember talking to Hirschfeld about it, and I said, how was it? He said, Dolly fell asleep. So, and then, and sort of he waited a beat, and he says, that means it's going to be a hit.
Oh, well, that's a very nice drawing of that 94 revival.
Oh, yeah, very nice also, drawing. Yeah. And, you know, Hirschfeld did a drawing of the film as part of the IBM series, I think in 77, in the Movies to Remember series.
Yeah.
The next one that he does, again, here's a show that racism is plays a very big role. South Pacific.
Yeah.
You Must Be Carefully Taught. I mean, it's such an important song that Lin-Manuel Miranda references it in the Hamilton score.
Yeah.
You know, that is a very powerful show.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
Lincoln Center Theater actually did a revival of that just a few years ago.
Yeah.
That was really revelatory.
Yeah. And really I think, again, we just think of it as this, you know, wartime.
Going to wash that man right out of my hair.
Right, right.
And Hirschfeld did, you know, in the original drawing, it's one of the last times he features sheet music. He does a collage of sheet music in the background of Ezio Pinza, who played the original, in the original production. South Pacific was a huge hit at the time. And when it was revived at City Center in 1965, Hirschfeld did a great drawing of Betsy Palmer in the Wash My Hair, Man Right Out of My Hair scene. That also harkens back to his very early drawings, sort of using a punnelist technique.
Mm.
And he does that on this one because she's underwater.
That's so funny you say that, because that to me looks like a Friday drawing. That to me looks like a later drawing than it is.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about Hirschfeld is it's timeless.
Yes.
You know, you can place them in a lot of different places, but they're of their moment and they're of no moment.
Yes,
you know,
totally.
They're always there. There's even a drawing of Florence Henderson in South Pacific.
Oh.
And when she passed away last year and they had a memorial service, they featured this drawing on the cover of the memorial service program.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because it's such a great drawing of her.
Now she was in the Oklahoma CD I had when I was little. She was on that CD.
Shocking! You did not have the original cast.
No, I don't know what version that was, but it was her picture. I distinctly remember Florence Henderson was on the Oklahoma CD.
Oh goodness!
Anyway, okay, what's next here?
Well, the next show is a show that Hirschfeld actually had some input on.
Yes. Oh, that's right. This is a good one.
So
King and I.
The King and I. Yes, it's The King and I. It's
1952.
51.
Yep.
When it was originally written, it was not. The show was Gertrude Lawrence's star vehicle. She would get cancer during the run and die.
Right.
And it became Yul Brynner's show.
Mm.
And it became his show that was so identified with him, he could almost do nothing else.
Right, right.
Or rather, he could always do it because people wanted to see Yul Brynner.
And he did do it for quite some time, did he not?
Oh, yeah. He did it for decades.
Yeah.
But what was Hirschfeld's input into The King and I? When he heard that Rodgers and Hammerstein were doing a musical set in Siam, set in the court of Siam. I don't know whether he called them up or he saw them at a party, and he said, listen, I have some films of dances in the court of Siam. When he went around the world with S.J. Perlman.
Happy birthday, S.J. Sid. Excuse me.
All of his friends call him Sid.
Yeah. His close friends, you know, we just call him Sid.
When he they were traveling around the world, they stopped in Siam and they got invited to the court of Siam and they had these court dances done.
Mm.
Hirschfeld was a home movie buff and he brought his camera with him and he asked if he could film the dances, which they allowed him to do. There hadn't been that much filming of the dances.
Right.
So he tells this to Rodgers and or Hammerstein, and they come to his studio with Jerry Robbins, and they watch these dances of these court dances in Siam, and some of that gets incorporated into Jerome Robbins and I'm not taking anything away from Jerome Robbins.
No, no.
He did a masterful job in the original production, as with so many other productions and ballets. But Hirschfeld sort of gave him more material to work with.
Inspiration.
It's exactly right.
From real life. That's really amazing.
Hirschfeld would draw a production in 1964 with Risa Stevens as Anna. He would do another version in 1965 with Barbara Cook as Anna. And then in 1996, he did a drawing of, it was a revival on Broadway with Lou Diamond Phillips as the King and Donna Murphy as Anna.
Nice. And there's also, I think there's a single of Yul Brynner, isn't there?
Oh, definitely.
77 or something.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's a great one.
But jump back in the order of Rodgers and Hammerstein shows, the next show would be Me and Juliet. And this would seem like it would be a perfect show for Hirschfeld to do. It's a backstage musical. And they had very high hopes for it. Unfortunately, it was not a great show. Rodgers, I don't think, ever really completely bought into it. And it never was as successful as they had hoped it would be. Joe Melziner had created a wonderful set that showed you both what was going on stage and what was going on backstage. In a sense, Noises Off is a much better, much funnier version
of
this
idea.
Yeah, exactly. But the drawing itself is really terrific. And we think of Rodgers and Hammerstein as just anything they wrote was
gold.
Was gold, was perfect, you know, it was a big hit. But like Allegro.
They have a pretty good track record, but no, they're bound to be
Their
some...
batting average is extremely high.
Yeah.
But even the best batters have a few strikeouts.
Definitely.
And Allegro in 1947 was a strikeout, not drawn by Hirschfeld because he was traveling around the world with Perlman for Westward Ha. Me and Juliet was not, although it recouped its investment. I mean, in terms of money, it was not a flop. But nobody does these shows anymore, and there's probably a reason for that. Another one, the next one is Pipe Dream, and that's 1955, based on a John Steinbeck novel, Cannery Row, as a matter of fact.
Interesting.
Great drawing. And not a particularly great show. The next one is Flower Drum Song.
No, we missed Cinderella.
Well, I'm just talking about Broadway shows.
Oh, well, I thought we were talking about Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals. I thought we were talking about Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals.
Okay, but you see, that isn't the original production of Cinderella. You realize that.
What do you mean?
The original production, TV production of Cinderella, which they wrote for TV originally, starred Julie Andrews.
Oh, in 1957?
I think it's in 1955 is the first time that it's done, maybe even 56.
From Wikipedia, it says 57.
57. Okay, I'm sorry. Far be it from me to contradict
it's
Wikipedia.
Okay, it's okay. We'll cut this out. Well, so, let's talk. Well, then we'll talk about Cinderella after. Is that what you're saying?
No, we can. Let's.
Oh, okay, great. So tell me about Cinderella, because all I know about Cinderella is that wonderful, I believe it was 1997 remake with Brandy.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, I loved it. Bernadette Peters was in it.
Yep.
Oh, it's so good.
And eventually, it would come to Broadway.
It's possible. That's my favorite part.
Well, there you have it. That is Catherine's podcast singing debut.
Yeah. No, I sing on this podcast all the time. Don't I?
Don't
anyway,
I?
Maybe I cut them all out.
Yes.
Well, okay, so Cinderella, I thought it was 1957, but you're saying this was for television.
Television.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
The original production starred Julie Andrews, and then they redid it for television with Leslie Ann Downs.
Oh.
And Ginger Rogers and Walter Pidgeon. And
so did it ever come to Broadway, or was it only on TV?
No, it would eventually, they eventually adapted it for the stage.
Oh, okay.
And it was a big hit on Broadway, and it's gone on tour.
Fairly recently. And,
right. Yeah. I think
2013,
I think that's
maybe?
About when it was. And now schools do it. Community theaters, regional theaters can do it. Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
Yeah. You know, okay. I just love the Brandy version, so I'm a 90s child.
You
I guess.
Hear that, Rodgers and Hammerstein? She loves the Brandy version. Back to the Broadway shows. The next one they did is Flower Drum Song.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful Hirschfeld drawing because he suggests these Japanese prints in the background. as well as this, you know, it's this sort of tug between East and West.
Right.
You know, and what is your identity. Mm. Again, I think a cultural identity. I think this is another very interesting show that we don't normally associate with this sort of corny, sweet idea of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Right, right.
But again, the idea of, you know, what is your cultural identity and how what happens when you assimilate seems like a very contemporary idea.
Definitely, yeah.
And they're talking about it 60 years ago.
Yeah, wow.
So the next time somebody tells you that Rodgers and Hammerstein are corny and don't address anything seriously, you tell them differently.
Yeah, definitely. I always do.
There was a revival of Flower Drum Song in 2002, and Hirschfeld did a drawing of that.
Yes.
With a little bit of color. Mm-hmm. And I think, like the production, it's good, but it's not one for the ages.
Mm. You know, Mr. Hirschfeld wouldn't say that. Because he always viewed things in their time.
Right. Well, I'm not comparing it to
you're
original
talking about
production.
The drawing, I'm saying.
Well, I'm talking about the drawing and the production
the
itself.
The drawing of the original show was better.
Okay.
Yeah, drawing of the original show was better. I will give you that.
So Rodgers and Hammerstein conclude their very successful Broadway career with a show that everybody knows.
Yes.
Again, not a show, when you think about it, a musical about Nazis was not Mel Brooks was not the first one to do a musical that featured Nazis.
Right.
Sound of Music in 1960.
59.
Oh,
David, you're just a year off all over the place today.
Hirschfeld was frequently 2 years off in all these
years. Yes, you told me that before. Yep.
See, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I'm in my 50s
now. A few more
now,
years,
so.
You'll be 2 years off on everything. Sound of Music, 1959.
Mary Martin in the center of it. Yep. Mary Martin was a great friend and fan of Hirschfeld, and she and her husband bought almost all the drawings in which she was in, and they including this one, which we later found out that a child colored in with crayons.
Yes.
It breaks our heart.
Not the first time we've seen that.
No, not the first time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hirschfeld would draw a scene of the film version to promote the film, and that film is among the most popular films ever made.
Really?
It is simply the
most
popular.
Wasn't it in theaters for like 5 years or something?
I couldn't say that.
I think it was in the theater for like at least 3 years.
But out of all the Rodgers and Hammerstein properties and things that they did, The Sound of Music, the film of The Sound of Music, is by far the most popular thing they ever did.
Yeah, definitely.
And unfortunately, Oscar Hammerstein never saw it.
Yeah. I've told you my favorite musical is Oklahoma, but my favorite song probably is Edelweiss. I always get a little tear when I hear it. I like to sing it to my dogs at night sometimes. Makes me cry. So one day I came in singing Edelweiss or something, and you told me, did you know that that was Oscar Hammerstein's final song?
I
did not, and then I cried a little bit more. It was his swan song.
We have a lot of boxes of tissues here at the Hirschfeld
there
Foundation.
There are two on this table right now with us
because
recording.
We never know when she's going to break out into tears.
No, it's true.
We would rather have an office where people break out into song. Catherine breaks out into tears.
Hey, I do that too. I think you can attest to that.
Yes, unfortunately.
But it was his final, that Sound of Music was their final show together. And Edelweiss was the final song he wrote, which I think, I remember saying at the time, that's very perfect.
Yeah.
That is the way to go.
Of course, Rodgers would not stop because Hammerstein did.
Oh.
He would continue. He had a need to write. And he would continue. He did a show by himself called No Strings that Hirschfeld drew. Again, here's a interracial romance on the Broadway stage in 1962. Mm. That's pretty progressive.
Yeah, definitely.
But he doesn't feel comfortable writing both the music and the lyrics. He likes having lyricists.
Yeah.
So who is he going to get as a lyricist? He goes to Hammerstein's protege, Stephen Sondheim.
Ah.
And they write a musical called Do I Hear a Waltz?
Oh, okay.
Sondheim does not count it as one of his pleasurable experiences.
Oh, interesting.
And the show itself is not either one of their best work.
Mm.
But he was trying.
Yeah.
He worked with Martin Charnin for 2x2, which starred Danny Kaye.
Right.
About Noah and the Ark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting drawing done in 1976. And I love Danny Kaye's coat in it. It's a dry brush effect.
Mm.
And it's just different. It's a different type of drawing.
Very cool.
There is sort of what I consider, there's a couple of now sort of retrospective drawings that are really terrific.
Yeah.
For Stereo Review magazine in 1978, Hirschfeld did a color piece of Rogers surrounded by five figures from his greatest shows.
The King and I, Oklahoma.
Pal Joey.
Yeah.
Gene Kelly and Pal Joey. Yep. Julie Andrews in Sound of Music.
This is a color
Alfred
piece.
Alfred Drake in Oklahoma.
Yep.
Yul Brynner and King and I, and Mary Martin in South
Sound
Pacific.
Of music. Oh,
you already have Julie
in
Andrews
South Pacific. Excuse me.
That's a wonderful piece. And then on the 50th anniversary of Rodgers and Hammerstein, 1993, the Times does a feature in the Sunday Times, and of course they have Hirschfeld. They commission a drawing by Hirschfeld of Rodgers and Hammerstein that shows Rodgers at the piano and Hammerstein right behind him writing out lyrics. It's a very nice piece.
Yeah.
It was later published as a limited edition lithograph.
And the lyric says, "Oh, what a beautiful morning."
Yes. but the one I like the best of the two of them that was done in the same year was a cover of a record that featured Rodgers and Hammerstein songs from the Ed Sullivan Show. And he got the commission. And I remember I was going up to his house and they said, "Can you bring up the material?" And I bring up the material to Hirschfeld. And he loved what he did.
Yeah.
And he was excited about working on it. And I go up there about 4 days later. And it's in the morning. We're having a cup of tea before he goes up to the studio. And I said, "Oh, how's that Rodgers and Hammerstein drawing coming?" And he looks at me with a look that I'd never seen on his face. He puts down his teacup. He's like, "I don't think I can do it anymore."
Oh, no.
And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "I've been trying to draw Oscar Hammerstein sort of full-faced, you know, sort of three quarters out. And every time I draw him, he appears drunk." He asked for more photos. Mm-hmm. I gave him more photos. Come up a couple of days later, he's like, I can't do it.
Oh, no.
He still looks drunk.
Yeah.
So in that drawing, which has Rodgers and Hammerstein surrounded by characters from Carousel, Sound of Music, King and I, South Pacific, Oklahoma, much more involved and suggests his cast drawings of their shows. He has Hammerstein in profile.
Yeah.
A different profile than you see in the other drawings.
Yes.
But he realized that...
To be fair, I think it's just flipped.
Yes.
I think it's just the other side of the profile.
For all I know, he gave up and copied himself.
Oh, works, though.
It works. And it's quite wonderful. That was also published as a limited edition lithograph.
Yes.
And if you said to me, what's one drawing that sums up Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Oh, 100%.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the one.
Definitely.
This is the one.
Definitely.
And he would draw Rodgers and Hammerstein just one more time.
Oh.
1999, in Philadelphia, they open up a theater called the Hal Prince Theater.
Mm.
And they commission Hirschfeld to do a mural of American musical theater, sort of all the greats of American musical theater. It's a four-part mural.
Mm.
It's really one of the great works. And one of the panels has Rodgers and Hammerstein, Lerner and Lowe, Burton Lane, Duke Ellington, Jerome Kern, the Gershwins, Kurt Vile, Cole Porter.
Irving Berlin,
Howard Arlen, and UB Blake.
Mm.
So it gives you some sense. That's just one panel.
Yeah, there's four of these.
Yeah, and each one of them is fantastic.
Yeah.
And so that's his last drawing of them, and it's a great drawing.
Yeah.
But it's not just strictly Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah. And then the final drawing he did of any show of Rodgers and Hammerstein was October 2002. So Flower Drum Song.
Yeah, Flower Drum Song.
So it was only 3 months before he passed.
Right.
Up till the end.
Right. So it's a real sort of full circle. Mm-hmm. He starts drawing Rodgers and Hart shows and really Hammerstein shows in 28, 29, sort of at the very beginning of his career. And he's still drawing their shows at the end of his career. So I think that's a testament to their work.
Yes. Oh,
that,
definitely.
There were still interesting drawings to be done of important productions.
Yep.
Because by 2002, they didn't send Hirschfeld out to just any show. Mm. They sent him out to the important shows.
Right, right.
So we hope this has been an important show to you.
Yeah, this was a fun one. I was excited to do this one because I do love Oklahoma. And I mean, who doesn't love Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Right. If we've missed something or gotten something wrong and you want to let us know.
you can email David. I'm kidding.
info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org.
Yep.
Of course, our website is alhirschfeldfoundation.org. We'll put links to all the drawings in the show notes, and they'll take you to the website, and you can look up everything there. Performer, production, publication, genre, date, Broadway season, however you want to find things, you can find them at our website.
Yep. And then follow us on Facebook. We're the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. Twitter and Instagram, we're at Al Hirschfeld. And this podcast is on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. And then our website for the podcast to listen directly is alhirschfeldfoundation.org/podcasts, S with an S. S is for Sound of Music.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes. And so that's it. Please rate and review us.
I want to recognize one other composer.
Oh, okay.
And performer.
Yes.
Dick Hyman, who writes our theme song,
yep.
Three or More Ninas. You can find more about Dick and his music at dickhyman.com.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dick. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yes.
And we'll see you when we do.
Bye.